Well, Ken Phillips, we are on a roll.
What happened?
This happens to be OPA number 131, and
Ooh.
it also marks, I believe, the third straight week that we've gotten into the studio and hit the record button. It's almost becoming habit again. I like it.
Yeah, it feels good. Well, I think we're kind of settling into routine more a little bit. It feels like.
Yeah, I think both of us have talked somewhat extensively about our changes in jobs as of late. And yeah, I think I've definitely settled into things, which is pretty nice.
Yeah.
And it's becoming a little more routine at this point. There's still some stuff to learn, obviously, but it's definitely more part of the system now than kind of being drug along.
Yeah, well, that's it takes a little bit of time to get used to a new job, especially when you've been, that's the kind of crazy part, when you've been at the other job that you were at for 20 years.
Yeah,
That's
I was a month shy of 20 years. Or, well,
well,
no, it was more than a month, because it was end of March.
I think we can
So it
round it up.
was a couple of months.
We'll round it up. I think that makes for a good round number there.
Yeah,
It's really close enough, I think.
it is definitely close enough to 20. Like, if you don't count 2 months short of 20.
Yeah, I'm gonna count it. I don't think there'd be some sudden change that would fall over you if you had worked there for the other 2 months. And you're like, wow, now I really have that perspective
Would
that
have been completely mind blowing.
I wouldn't have had. Yeah, exactly. I think you've got the whole 20-year experience, I guess. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, I definitely got the 20-year experience.
So,
And Lord only knows, I might not be at jobs for another tw 20 years.
yeah, I think
Well, actually, it'll be at least 20.
people change jobs fairly frequently, it seems like, out there in the world these days, what with the gig economy and everything. But I don't know.
Yeah, I'm ready to stay put for probably a longer than average time in my estimation, as long as they will have me.
Oh, although just a little side note to our listeners out there, it's probably not a bad idea to once in a while kind of explore that job market just to kind of see what
Oh,
your
yeah.
skills might be worth out there, just to kind of put your toe in the water almost, if you will.
Right.
Even just to kind of if you're not really thinking about leaving, every so often. It's just to
Yeah, 'cause the recruiter that I ended up talking to ended up saying check every like 3 to 5 years, I believe was what her advice was. She was not happy that I took the job that I took because she didn't get it for me, but
Yeah.
that's
Well,
tough cookies on
that
her
is a
part.
tough job. I mean, sometimes it's like through no fault of your own, you're just not going to get the be able to close the sale on that if you're the recruiter, you know. It just depends. It's like you're, in a way, it's not your fault if the job you're hiring for is terrible. You're just trying to do
Oh.
the best job you can to fill the position, right?
Well, yeah, and there was actually an example. Like, she tried to get me another job, but the guy just wasn't calling me back for whatever reason.
Well, yeah.
Like, she thought that she had something, a position in need. It was actually quite similar to the job that I was working at, which in which we did a lot of work for McDonald's. It would have been working with Wendy's a lot. It would not have been much of a change.
So it could have been a fairly smooth transition, you know.
Yeah, I thought, oh yeah, I could see how this would work pretty well. And it was gonna be a traveling one too. It sounded kind of exciting to I don't mind being out of the, well, and in the current job I can be out of the office at points to do site inspections. So that will be in the job description at some juncture, not right now, but at some juncture.
Yeah, it just doesn't seem logical for somebody to go through the effort of like putting a job posting out there, hiring a
A recruiter
to try to source somebody to fill the position, and then just not respond to any communication. I guess it just is a little reminder that people are kind of weird, Kevin.
People are weird.
Every time you think you get them figured out, something will come around and surprise you. I guess there could be good excuses or reasons, something coming up, emergencies at work or home, but I don't know. It just seems a little strange. That's just the kind of stuff we like to cover, though, Kevin. Stuff that's a little strange.
Yes, and something that I would have called a strange for doing, but was a natural extension of our childhood. The two of us played many a game of Dungeons and Dragons.
Oh, right. We did.
From there...
In advanced Dungeons and Dragons, I believe.
I would have to say by the time we got to it, it was already advanced Dungeons and Dragons, because I believe... Wasn't that 70s?
Well, see, there's... I think the Dungeons and Dragons line still continued on as well. Like, it wasn't like advanced Dungeons and Dragons completely replaced... Dungeons and Dragons.
Well, yeah.
But come to think of it, I don't know where they are now. Because people are still apparently playing Dungeons and Dragons.
Oh, yeah. My brother-in-law plays still. Like, he goes to that Gen Con that's in Indianapolis. It's a giant convention for RPG people.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. That would be interesting to try again. I can remember it taking like so long though. It's like hard to imagine.
Yeah, my buddy invited me into a campaign, and I was, because they were up in Cleveland, I was going to,
Skype in or something.
Skype in or something.
Yeah.
To play, and I'm just like, nah, man, Nah, I like to do other shit. Like, I think that's part of my problem at this point. Like, right. It would be fun to do, but it's just like, there are a lot of options, man, and that's not the one that I want to go with.
Right. I mean, if you could add another 6 or 7 hours to a day, you know, perhaps we could be... we'd be talking or something, but
yeah. Although I did think to myself that I could just make myself a character sometime. Like, I always enjoyed that aspect of things.
Okay.
As you know, I've been trying to do it more for the site too. But I used to draw all the time, right. And that is not something that I have really let go by the wayside. But I'm trying to. Kind of bring the funk back.
Get your groove back.
Get my groove back. Source,
yes, you might say.
Hold on, what did that have to do with... I like designing the characters.
There you go, yeah.
Yeah. I used to like to draw the characters on top of, kind of creating it. I guess I always kind of enjoyed that part because I feel like I had way more characters than we had campaigns sometimes.
Oh, yeah, I kind of remember that too. Like, it took comparatively so long to see the change. I feel like it took so long for your characters to, like, level up and get experience and kind of change that way that it was more exciting to just start over with a new character somehow.
Oh, yeah.
If that makes sense.
I agree. Like,
you could try different classes or
different role. You try different roles. Like, you're not just always a mage.
Kevin, this is way, 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 way off topic. But we would play other role playing games besides just Dungeons and Dragons.
I was gonna reel it back in at some point.
Oh no, I'm going further off topic.
That's
what I'm warning about here. I was hoping we would eventually go back to our plan topic, but this is a little bit of a sidetrack to a sidetrack, but We played a lot of different kinds of role-playing games, including Ghostbusters, which I don't know if we talked about. That was a fun one.
Oh, yeah. I'm not sure if we talked about it on the show or not. I know we've talked about it. But, yeah, Ghostbusters was on the list. I do remember enjoying that quite a bit.
Now, I don't believe I played this game with you, but there was a Marvel role-playing game that was available back in the 90s.
Oh, no. I do not remember playing a Marvel one.
I can remember playing with my brother and his friend, Bill Porta. Oh, I might have to bleep his name. I don't know if he wants to be outed here. But we played that game, and it was kind of fun because I would, you know, you would have different characters from the comics that you'd be playing as. I think I remember being Fire Lord, who was apparently a former Herald of Galactus at one point. So similar in strength to the Silver Surfer in terms of cosmic powers and things.
Yeah, that's pretty powerful.
Yeah. But I could just remember, like, there was a campaign that Bill had bought from the store and was, like, reading to us and was not really prepared to play the campaign. Sorry to out him after all these years. But it was kind of just like flipping through pages as we were progressing. He was the game master. And I don't know why, but this one's really stuck with me through the years. But we walked into a room and he was like supposedly like describing, you know, what was going to happen. Like we were expecting to like be, I don't know, I feel like, you know, this was our objective coming up here. And he just starts reading, ba-bump, ba-bump. The darkness is interminable. Ba-bump, ba-bump. There is no light here. Ba-bump, ba-bump. There can be no sense of time. And he then was like, oh, wait, I'm reading the wrong part. So it was like completely nonsense in terms of what we were expecting to have happen. And like the length of time that he went on reading it was like concerning to me. And that just really sticks with me. And it just popped into my head the other day for some reason. And I felt like I had to get it out here. So, since we were talking about...
That's hilarious.
Yeah.
That's...
Now, a real... A real good, like, I feel like Game Master would probably have tried to play things a little smoother somehow there, but that was just a really, really funny to me at the time. Like, I think I really cracked up about it at the time, and it's just stuck with me since then.
Yeah, I could see how that one would
Because me and my brother were both, like, looking at each other, raising eyebrows, like, what the hell does he think he's... Because I think we both pretty much knew pretty quick that something was not right.
Something was amiss.
Yeah. We're like, this is like total dream sequence or something. Did our characters get knocked out or something? Was there a hallucinogenic gas that went off? But anyway, yes. Yeah, so that's... I think, Kevin, if you were, you know, going to be analyzing a game like Dungeons & Dragons, considering all the possible outcomes, that would be pretty tough to do. But as far as I know, no one would do something like that.
No, but I do question, this is another one where I kind of, I know they talked about it quite extensively in this article, which I passed on. But there's another game that we moved on. After we stopped playing a lot of Dungeons & Dragons, we played some Magic the Gathering.
Right.
And we honestly still played it. I kind of jokingly said, but I think it's at least partially true that the podcast has replaced some Magic playing that we had still been doing, you know, at least up until... Actually, I couldn't believe when I posted the one article that we're not going to get to tonight... I thought to myself, oh my god, the first time this happened was 2015 and we talked about this? It made me realize how long we've been doing the show.
Oh, well, yeah, it has been a while.
But anyway, so yeah, I mean, we've probably played some Magic within the last five years.
Yeah, I've probably played it more recently because...
oh, you do play with your daughter.
My daughter
sometime.
Was playing it for a while. We haven't played it for a little while, but like probably a year ago, we played it quite a bit. And we went to a tournament together, actually, in town here.
Nice.
I mean, I could see myself playing again sometime. I mean, especially the tournament was kind of fun because it was like one of those where you buy like the booster packs and you kind of have to assemble your deck, and so does everybody else.
Right.
But you know, it was harder for me because I didn't know the current sets that much, but it was still fun.
Yeah, and that's one of those things that with this this study was talking about how Magic the Gathering is officially the world's most complex game.
Yes.
And I'm not really surprised by that, just because, like you said, like, there are sets that, it came out when we were in high school?
Correct.
So, like, the early 90s sometime?
That's kind of when it started, yeah.
And there has been a continuing development of cards since that time.
I believe the article stated there's 20,000 cards plus that are in print at this time. So that's quite a few.
Oh, yeah, 20,000.
And unlike, say, chess, you know, checkers, there's no board, or even like a game like Risk or Candyland. I don't know if that's ever been trying to be solved by artificial intelligence or not, but these games have boards, and so they kind of like have prescriptive, even, or Go, that was another good example of a game that has recently been, you know, seemingly solved by
computers.
Yes.
Yeah, it's definitely one that we've talked about some, too.
But that has been seen as a very complex game. But still, it has a board that you play it on that has a certain, you know, number of spaces on it. These are kind of like known constraints on the gameplay.
Oh, right.
Whereas a game like Magic, you're kind of almost creating the board as you play, in a way. For those who haven't played the game, you can like summon creatures and things to put into play on the game board. And then also put like resources into play on the game board. But there's no like slots you're filling up per se. It's like you can just keep doing as much as you want, however you want. And then the cards will at times interact with each other and cause different effects to change the normal rules of the game. So it does get very complicated, as we said, especially with 20,000 plus cards.
Yeah, I'm actually a little bit surprised that it isn't more than 20,000. Because
a lot of those sets are reprints of older cards, so I don't know if they're counting that or not. That could skew the numbers a little bit.
Yeah, but I mean, I guess I feel like they always try to come up with different rules in each subsequent set to kind of like, they kind of come up with a series of things, and they usually have some type of counter in other aspects of the game. Because I guess that's the other thing, is that in most of those board games, you only have two colors to choose, you know, like it's just two opposing players.
Yes.
And this can be a multiplayer game.
Right.
Which, and there are different combinations, because there's the black, red, green, and blue.
Oh, well, that's right. Yeah, there's different types of, different colors or kind of...
mana types.
Yeah, so that can definitely play an effect when you're... And that's part of it, too, because you're choosing the cards to put in your deck. So it's not like you're using, like, a standard 52-card deck or something like that to play a game. It's like you're actually building your deck, which I guess you could think of as being your game board in a way-ish. Not really. but it's what you're playing with, I guess.
Right. Yeah.
It's the game board and the dice in a way, because it's like you're shuffling it up. I don't know. Is this metaphor getting stretched too far here, Kevin?
Yeah.
To say that you're building the game board and the dice when you're getting ready to play Magic the
Gathering? I think it's good enough to say that you're choosing a lot of variety. You know, there are a lot of options for everyone involved, because each game is 60 cards too, which is more game pieces than a lot of those other, you know, games that are mentioned too. Like
even Monopoly. Means,
yeah, even Monopoly. So like, even in a two-player game, you're talking about 120 cards that can have a pretty wide variety, because I believe that it was pretty standard to have about 20 mana in each deck, so you had like 40 cards.
Non-land cards.
Non-land cards.
Resource cards that gives you the power, you know, the fuel for your spells, if you will.
So, I don't know if that's still the preferred, you know, split
so
or not, but yeah, I mean, but you don't need to do that 20-40 split either, though. Like, you know, so there's a lot of still, even with 80 cards, there's so, probably like 80 unique cards that are going to be in play at any time.
So essentially, I had some questions like this, Kevin, about how this game was actually analyzed. So before this evening, I followed through on the link to at least read the abstract of the research article that was done.
Yeah, and I mean, it's pretty crazy that Alex Churchill, independent researcher and board game designer in Cambridge, England, Stella Biderman of Georgia Tech, and Austin Herrick of, since we're all about OPA, the University of Pennsylvania.
What?
So
that's Eastern Pennsylvania.
Yeah, right? That's Philadelphia. It doesn't really count, huh?
Yeah, no. Sorry. Close but no cigar. Nothing against. Well, okay. I won't say. I'll just leave that unsaid. But yeah, they studied. So, like I said, they studied Magic the Gathering. And as I read some of the details, they chose decks that were like something that people would play competitively. So I'm guessing they may have looked at the card lists that were published for like champions who play in tournaments or things like that, or who knows? They're not just using like weirdo decks or randomly chosen cards or something like that.
Oh, okay.
They're starting with kind of normal decks, and they've encoded all of the cards somehow in instructions and that can be simply understood by this computer algorithm. And then they play the game out, but and try to be able to determine who could win at any point, like if they can solve the game, like they can for, you know, checkers, chess, or Go now, to be able to say like, this is going to win the game. You know what I mean? Or as I learned today, Connect Four is also a solved game, Kevin. If you play first, you can always win Connect Four if you play perfectly. Just FYI.
I have not played Connect 4.
No, it's been a while
recently.
Yeah.
I'm not completely surprised by this news, though.
Yeah, I'm glad I didn't rock your world too bad, because I need you to last through. This is only the first topic.
Yeah, I'm going to go with Connect 4 is a little bit harder, easier to solve than checkers.
That's probably true. I'm going to guess. Yeah. But checkers also has been solved, as you said.
Yeah, and I know that checkers is easier than chess, which mm-hmm. is why that comparison is always made.
Bringing it back to Magic here.
Yeah.
They've encoded it to be played within a simple algorithm, and they've been able to associate that, I guess logically, with the idea of this... Or maybe they actually encoded it inside this Turing machine, quote unquote, which is like a specific way of like encoding data and processing data that has been shown to be able to execute any kind of code. But if there's an unknown piece of code that's being executed, they've shown that it's impossible to know if the code will ever stop at an error or if it'll ever stop or continue and never stop. And they've been able to associate Magic in this algorithm that happens and to play this game of Magic with this same problem and been able to show that it is like a quote unquote halting problem. Like they're not able to tell if the program's going to halt, and they're never, so that they've been able to tell that like they're never going to be able to tell if Magic can be won or not for, based on the current conditions of the game. And while they were playing the game, in their algorithm, they had like special, like they eliminated free choice from the game. Like there were certain, like you, I guess, had to play a certain way. Like each of the players had to play a certain way while they were playing the game to kind of like make it even simpler for them to analyze.
Okay.
And even then they said it was, there's no way to be able to compute. So it's not like they're saying we're not going to be able to, we're not there yet. They're saying like there's no way to be able to compute who could win this game, like to solve this game. So it is the most complex game to have been analyzed so far. But I will say that probably, you know, real world quote unquote games that people play, like if you consider, say, the, you know, some people might consider the legal system to be a game, right? Like if you know the rules, if you you can skirt the right rules, you know, get through the letter of the law in some cases, you win the game, quote unquote.
Right.
I would say that that's probably even much more complex than Magic the Gathering, Kevin.
I would say that some real life situations might be a little more complicated than Magic the Gathering.
So to my untrained or unnecessarily, like I'm not a data scientist by any means, it just seems like this
life, this, baby,
this conclusion kind of, I guess would make it seem unlikely that they'd ever be able to solve quote unquote a game as complicated as say the legal system. Or some real life kind of scenarios.
Yeah, it would be pretty tough.
Mm-hmm.
To determine, like, if you can't determine what's going to happen in Magic, and again, like, I there's enough of a variety, obviously, that it causes a lot of chaos. Like the order that the cards come up, the, you know, the composition of the cards. There's a lot of different variables, right, you know, that are involved in all of that. And then, like I said, like, there's at least a minimum of 120 cards every game.
Right. And then
There are different, way different varieties of that. And you don't need to have just 120 cards if you start adding more cards to the system. Because, I mean, I remember maybe bumping up to 65 sometimes if I felt like I needed it. You know, I always did try to keep it as, after a while, I think after maturing as a player, like I remember not minding like 70, 75 card decks. But then at some point I'm like, man, that is really inefficient. Like it really kind of, you know, yeah, it takes you too long to get to the stuff that helps you win usually.
Right. I think that's what it is. It's like, well, like I was saying, you're kind of building the dice in a way because when you shuffle your cards randomly, in theory, you're not going to know what you're going to pick, but you can build the deck so you know what you're going to get in an essence.
Right.
And the fewer cards you have in your deck, kind of the more likely that you know what you're going to have in your opening hand, if you will. So you can kind of like give yourself a better chance to get what you are going to be wanting to see.
Right.
If you have fewer cards in a way. If I understand kind of the theory behind having as few cards in your deck as possible being a good thing. The other thing is, I guess you would never expect to see like all the cards in your deck during the course of a normal game, because that would take like a really long time to like draw all your cards.
Yeah, I feel like that was always a rarity.
You want, and you can only have 4 copies of a card. That's the other thing. If you've got some really killer cards in there, you're going to want to like have as few of the filler cards so you can just get to the killer, if you know what I'm saying.
Or ways to get to the killer.
Yes.
I definitely think that you you turned me on to the well, I think it was the blue variety was the one that normally had a lot of ways to look through your deck to check for cards.
Yeah.
It is something like the wife likes to play card games when we're out drinking.
Okay.
And there are a lot of rules where you can pick up more cards and play more cards. And it still goes back to you and Magic. And it where you always, you're like, well, you can get through the deck more, you know, if you have some way of cycling through it. Like, that was the only time you'd go through a deck, if you had some type of blue card set so that you could look through your deck to get to the other stuff. Yeah. But, I mean, it didn't always necessarily match everything that you were trying to do.
Yeah, and that's why those decks were extra annoying, because the person who was using it could usually get through that filler to get those cards that are going to kill you. Or at least really annoy you, like, or find that, you know, third counter spell so they can really just stop you from doing anything. That's always fun, too.
Yeah, the counter spell.
But
the bane of everyone's existence.
Yeah, I just felt like this was a very interesting article. And I got to give a shout out to my wife on this one, because she actually is the one to send me this article. Strangely enough, I don't believe has ever played a game of Magic in her life. So, good for her.
This is on technologyreview.com. So
she's good to have recognized that I would find this interesting.
Yeah, and it was definitely interesting. Something. Well, since that at least have vague ties to the paw portion of this show. We definitely have one that is 100% tied to this local area, Columbus itself.
True.
The Dispatch, you sent me a post about how that there are still 4 bicycle couriers that work in downtown Columbus delivering different items.
Yeah, this story, when I saw that article, I was like, wow, this is a really great story. I feel like I would have wanted to follow this even if it had been in like a different city, but being in Columbus really made it interesting. Yeah, I can remember having seen bicycle couriers in years past in downtown Columbus.
Yeah, I have never been one to work in downtown Columbus. Again, noting the one whole job that was in the suburbs.
Mm.
And even now, I do not work downtown.
But
closer to downtown than I was, though.
I was somewhat surprised to see that there still are currently in Columbus, Ohio, in 2019, 4 men, it seems, who were...
yeah, they were all... Interestingly enough, they're all in their 40s.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They were all bicycle messengers.
Yeah, all bicycle... And I guess I'm not completely surprised. There's still some stuff that... I don't know if it's quicker or not, but I know that people, at least in my line of work, like to see drawings. And if you can expedite it to them without them having to print them or something like that, it kind of saves some hassle.
Yeah.
I know that we use local driving couriers every now and again to get stuff from our office to another office, you know, for structural review.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I guess if the destinations were close, it makes sense to have a bike courier, right? Like, if we had someone driving doing the same thing.
Well, I feel like...
It is interesting that they're still biking.
But, yeah.
You know, that means the range has got to be kind of limited.
Yeah. Well, it is, I believe, you know, just downtown mainly that they're doing the bicycling in. So, you're probably... I imagine that they're... Especially in a town like Columbus that's kind of so spread out... The driving couriers probably make a lot more sense in most of the area around here. But
oh yeah,
downtown, and it's from reading the article, it seemed especially legal type documents are where they're getting a lot of their business from, because that's the area where there still is required to have physical signatures on actual paper in some cases to be able to process certain legal actions. So like they'll have to go from law offices to the courts and try to get there before, 5 o'clock when they're closing. And you know, they're able to ride right up to the court and just take their bike right in. And they're pretty experienced with it because they've been doing it for a long time. So they know everybody there at the court. They know how to get around and navigate through things. So it's a very efficient process from the sounds of it.
Yeah.
And the lawyers that they did interview a lawyer who seemed very pleased with their services, even though it sounds like it could be a little hectic towards the end of the day, especially as they're getting things can tend to get busy then. But in a way, it would be fun too, I think. Although I don't know if I would still be enjoying to do that in my 40s necessarily.
If you're doing it that consistently, they're in at least good biking shape.
Yeah.
If nothing else. I mean, they all look like they're in pretty good shape.
Yeah, they look like they could be
a bike gang.
Or some sort of superhero group or something. Yeah. They're all kind of wearing a similar uniform almost.
Yeah, you got to be comfortable doing that.
A literal messenger bag. It seems to be the de rigueur choice there. I mean, that's kind of what you have to go with, right?
Yeah.
There's not really a choice here.
No. No, not even a little bit.
Well, I don't know, Kevin. These people, it sounds like, have had their job for just about the same as 20 years, I guess.
Yeah.
But I don't think they're willing to make that change, it sounds like, from the article.
Well, I mean, it'd be kind of interesting to see. I mean, would they go into driving courier after that? They're like, oh, I'm retired. I'm going to drive now. Like, I mean, what do they do after this is over?
I don't know. It's a good question because, as they said in the article, it's really the rise of electronic signatures to be able to, you know, click on something to sign it. That kind of has spelled the demise of this industry, and I guess that's why we're not seeing a lot of young people getting into the bicycle courier game.
Right.
So you might wonder eventually if some of these legal documents that they're doing now eventually get converted over to being able to be done through electronic signatures. Or at some point, you know, you're not going to want to be bicycling around anymore, maybe.
Hey, yeah, I would think at some point that the fatigue would set in.
So,
but who knows? I mean, there's some people that keep themselves in crazy good shape until their 60s, so.
That is true.
But that still seems like a long time to be doing the courier gig.
Yeah, I don't know, man. It's a bit of a trade-off, because I can see liking the lifestyle and kind of getting out there and getting out into the world and fresh air and all that
exercise. Yeah, it would be kind of nice.
Sometimes you...
exercise is your job.
Right. If that's the case. I don't know.
Yeah. It's pretty interesting. Like you said, like that's kind of one of those... It belongs with the... my parents still have a milkman kind of scenario.
Right. Yeah.
You know, it's just like, hold on, what? It's 2019 and there's still a milkman? Yep. Yep. Parents still have milk dropped off in a milk box out front.
I wonder if that is the guy's only stop on his route. He's like, look, eventually... these people are going to keep ordering milk or else I'm out of a job. You think he's like really laying on the guilt trip on your parents, or I'm just trying to figure this out.
It's I hope he's not laying the guilt trip down.
Yeah, I don't know. It's a weird thought, but it's a weird thing, so I'm not exactly sure what to think of it. But somehow, boy, we're really going long today, aren't we?
Well, I wasn't sure. We could go any number of ways. We could go with our unintended topic.
Okay.
And start talking about some...
maybe we should.
Malt liquor.
Yes.
You brought it up.
We're having an extended Bell Time beer, if you will, segment.
Yeah, I would definitely call it. And if we want to get that part out of the way, I found the beer to be quite delicious and could not really do a good job of putting it down, despite the fact that I was fully aware that Wolf's Ridge Yub Nub, it's a Dire Wolf Cinnamon Coffee Imperial Stout. So
there's a lot going on.
There's a lot going on, and it also happens to be 10.8% alcohol. So there is a whole lot going on.
Although it does hold together pretty well, I think.
Yeah, it really, the cinnamon is not overwhelming to me. It does help. I am not a coffee drinker, but I do like coffee in my beer. It does pair well or create a nice roasty bitterness.
Yeah.
In some situations on purpose. But in this case, the cinnamon is definitely in there just enough to take out that bitter end of the coffee. Because you could easily over cinnamon that thing, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think it's good because you can definitely taste all of the different elements, but it's not like overpowering you. So at yeah. the same time, though, it's a sipping beer, so I think you want to like just gulp this one down and you just kind of slowly enjoy the flavors, let them suffuse you. And experience the warm glow that will surely overtake you.
Yeah, if we definitely would have had a 22 each, this would have been a very interesting show.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're holding it together pretty well considering the circumstances here.
But yeah, because of the high alcohol content of the Yub Nub, I did get us to talk about malt liquor.
Sure, we were talking about how malt is what is actually fermented to produce the alcohol in
beer. In just beer, yeah. Period, end of sentence. So, yeah, the term malt liquor, though it is mostly applied to many a great variety of beers, St. Ides, Mickey's, King Cobra, Steel Reserve, Old English. And I'm trying to rattle them off without looking it up.
Bull Ice? I don't know if that was
Colt 45. not mention Colt 45?
Yes.
It is most associated with that, but malt liquor really kind of refers to a whole lot of different beers.
Mickey's, did we talk about?
Believe I had said Mickey's.
All right, good. Yeah, so we realized that we were a little bit ignorant about what exactly was a malt liquor, and
it really encompasses a lot of ground.
Yeah, there's some shades of gray. I think it's fair to say
that would be an understatement. It's the term malt liquor is documented in England in 1690 as a general term encompassing both beer and ale. So I'm going to guess they mean lagers and ales.
Right. Yeah, you would think that ale is a type of beer. I think that was the first I had heard that sort of distinction being made. But I am but a simple American, and they could have different understandings over across the pond, as they say. yeah, we were talking about how they malt liquors. So in this country, there's kind of different definitions by state. So that's part of the problem with coming up with a single unified theory of malt liquor.
Yes, that was something else that we learned in the process.
But usually people will agree that it's a higher alcohol content and seemingly produced using adjuncts that are seen as cheaper and probably throwing in some extra enzymes and things to make the fermentation process supercharged.
Yeah.
This is my kind of limited understanding way of putting it.
You almost remember the Wikipedia article word for word, so I'm just going to let you keep on rolling.
Okay. I'm trying to put this in, you know, I'm but a simple caveman. I cannot understand these ways. But I'm just trying to put it into what I remember anyway. So that is kind of how malt liquor is understood. And I guess it's fairly similar to the popular understanding of the term to be a strong beer type of beverage.
Yeah, that was always a draw. Well, actually, surprisingly, I really did not drink that many 40s. In my lifetime.
During our drinking years.
Yeah, during the drinking years, like, it was just, neither of us really did a lot of drinking in high school, correct?
No, I really didn't do any.
I drank a handful of times with my older brother. Definitely a couple Pitt Penn State games. I did some drinking with him. We went to see Metallica in Pittsburgh. A couple of New Year's up at State College. So there were a handful of times I drank, but I didn't really drink that. But I usually had liquor then. I did not like the taste of beer. Like, that was definitely something that grew on me in college when I was actually in college itself.
Yeah, I can remember also not liking beer when I first tasted it. So,
even there, not a lot of people drank malt liquor. It's more, I was a proponent of Miller Lite. I will admit, I was not a Bud Light guy. But when I could get some supercharged beers, I guess I usually went. We knew some people that went across the border into Canada. So I'd have them get Molson Triple X.
Oh, wow, yeah. I can remember that being a thing.
Because that was, like, I believe it was 9.3% alcohol or something like that. Because I guess I always, at some point, I always valued high alcohol beer, which I guess is kind of interesting why I didn't get into malt liquor at some point.
Yeah, you would think that would be a natural kind of avenue for you to get that.
Because I do remember trying, like, Ice House.
Right.
The ice beers. I was more of an ice beer guy. If I tried to go for a high alcohol one, it was definitely an ice beer when they started coming out.
Yeah, those were a big trend in my circle, I can remember, at that time. Yeah, I don't know. I don't think they tasted very good, really, but that wasn't the point, I think.
Yeah, and I mentioned, like, you had mentioned that you guys had a party in State College that was 40s only.
That's right. Yeah, the 40s party.
And, I was like, oh, man, I need to export that to Kent. So, yeah, I did exactly that, and we kind of, we were talking about that earlier. But that was a lot of fun. Like, I just told people, I'm like, they usually came to my place to party anyway. And because I usually supplied alcohol. It's kind of funny how that works. Free alcohol. We'll be there. Ron's Lawn Service, thank you for the donation to the beer fund.
That's funny.
Money well spent.
Yeah, some good times.
But yeah, we did an all 40s party, and it was funny because even when I was going through the drive-thru, they're like, oh, do you want paper bags? And I'm like, yep. And they supplied us with paper bags. I believe we bought 40 40s.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I bet that looked pretty interesting in the refrigerator.
It just... I don't think we put them all in the refrigerator at the same time. Oh, and we always used to, and I think we did for this occasion, I think we put some on ice. We always used to go at the Kent State ice rink was right near my last place. And we'd go down there because the Zamboni would come out and dump all the ice scrapings out in the parking lot. So we'd go there to get free ice.
Do you think that they put like chemicals or anything in there that would be bad for you?
I wonder. Oh, we didn't use it in drinks.
Yeah,
we just packed if we had a keg, we would put the keg in there and then pack all the snow into it.
Yeah.
You know, we'd have some type of a plastic tub, and then we'd have the keg in there, and then we just throw snow in the rest of it to keep it cold. But no, I don't think that there's not too much to that. Yeah, we never drank it or anything crazy like that.
Well, that's probably good.
It was used as a cooling agent solely.
Okay.
I will assure you, if someone did that, I did not know about it. I will put it that way. Maybe
good. That's very, very good of you to get out in front of this, you know, before there's any legal action taken. What 20 years after the fact?
Yeah, it would 20+ years after the fact.
I think we all made it out scot free at this point.
Yeah, I would think that there would be a statute of limitations on whatever offense that might be.
Yeah.
Yeah, we always used to go down there to grab ice to help chill stuff. So we probably grabbed some ice and put 40s. We probably had some in the fridge and some on ice, I would imagine. I don't remember in particular.
That seems like a very reasonable solution.
But I forgot that Jeremy did not come over for the party itself. But the next night he came over to watch, it was definitely an ECW pay-per-view. I want to say it was November to Remember. And we got hammered on 40s. Like, we still had 40s left from the party.
Mm, yeah.
And we got hammered. And, oh, no, actually, it wouldn't have been November to Remember. It had to have been something else. We went to... His girlfriend was at another party at a gay gentleman's house.
Mm.
And I believe they were having a Valentine's Day pajama party. And we went there just crushed on 40s.
So that probably was pretty awesome for everybody there.
And I'm just going to say that someone may have thrown up in the kitchen sink immediately as he walked into the door.
Oh my goodness.
And I would just say that that was not me.
All right. Well, say no more. We're not going to, you know,
I am not naming any names.
No, we would not do that.
No, that would not be cool at all.
Probably should have stayed at home looking back on things. You know, hindsight being 2020. You know, that doesn't totally surprise me because the things about 40s is that there's a lot of you know, content in there, 40 ounces, right? And it's high alcohol content, as we discovered.
Well, and that was another part of the definition, is that Though malt liquor can be considered anything over 5%, if you're going with the more generic definition. They did say that the typical ones that we'd mentioned usually range between 6 and 9%, which definitely is on the higher side when you consider even like a Bud Heavy is like a. Oh, and you know what? I had Untappd open. I could probably just look that up just to confirm what the alcohol content of that is.
Yeah, I want to say that they might be at a 5.5 for the Bud Budweiser
Oh,
regular.
five even for
Five.
Bud Heavy.
Oh, okay. Well, I got that one wrong. I would have lost in Jeopardy on that one. That James Holzhauer would have taken all my money.
Yeah, I did think that it was a little bit higher than that. I believe when we were talking there, I said 5.3, which wouldn't have surprised me at all. I thought it was low fives, like that probably would have been the top end. But yeah, I mean, yeah, there's just not. I guess over 5% is
You could consider
technically
that
kind of heavy,
to be
but
on the heavier side.
we both agreed that A, there are not a lot of beers that are 6% alcohol.
Right.
There are some. I did think of some, but I would say that that's a range that people usually are, you know, in the five somewhere, or they're going seven plus.
Yeah.
And I do feel like most of those malt liquors were seven plus. I want to say they're. And I guess that's something that we didn't really look at. Like, I guess I'd be kind of interested to see what what the alcohol. Oh, I probably could do that again. Untapped easier.
Yeah, unfortunately, we were probably more interested in the alcohol content. Well, let me take a step back and say definitely more
Oh,
interested.
Colt 45 is only 5.6%.
Really?
6 IBU. Oh my God, there is like no hops in there.
Cool 45? No, that's pretty mellow tasting from what I remember.
I
Yeah.
guess that's the other thing that's kind of funny to look at now.
Although 5.6, as we've said, would be on the heavier side,
Yeah,
considering
Mickey's
our
is
newly.
5.6.
Yeah. So they're just a bit stronger than the regular beers, but don't sleep on the 40 ounces being present at one time, because I think that because you don't want to like keep that around forever necessarily. If your beer is going
Oh.
to get warm, there's like an incentive to drink it quickly, I guess is what I'm saying.
Yeah, and I feel like that's kind of a difference between those beers in general. I remember a lot of talk about being ice cold back in our day in college. And beverages nowadays, especially although I did not let it last that long, the Yub Nub. If it gets a little bit warmer, usually you taste a little more of the brewing flavor in there. If you let it get a little bit on the warmer side, so I don't really, I kind of take my time drinking beer normally these days.
Yeah. But you might not want to taste the brewing flavor of a
Have a Colt 45.
artificially boosted with enzymes or corn syrup or what have you. The
Yeah.
sort of thing that the Dilly Dilly guy would send back to his rivals as we all remember.
Well, they did say that rice was an option, which is what Budweiser uses.
Oh, that's true. Yeah. He would take that totally. But
So it just in general made me go, yeah, I'm fine with not drinking any of your beers. Any of you guys.
Yeah, you guys can all keep your beer.
That's okay.
You would be the one sending back their beer to them, like on a big wagon. We could do if we did our own version of this commercial.
I could sell this corn syrup on the black market for lots of money.
Yeah. Seriously, it's not worth nothing. I mean, that's a lot of corn syrup. You're just going to give it away? Come on.
Oh, man. Well, I guess that wraps up the show, Sir Ken.
Yeah.
He's at Gozer33. I'm at DeFrango11. The brand is at Stunt Granny. Rate and review us on iTunes, SoundCloud, or wherever you think, or listen to us. Why did that all go so sideways?
I don't know.
I started thinking about plugging the beer again, which I was going to mention, the Wolf's Ridge Yub Nub. Unfortunately, not a big distributorship, but again, something that puts the O in OPA.
Yeah, I mean,
for sure-sies. I definitely like the good beverages.
And maybe not.
Oh, and I forgot Columbus Ale Trail number 5. There are, I believe, 9 new stops on the trail. I forgot that somewhere in particular is basically right where I vacated from the condo.
They started a brew pub in your condo?
Not in the condo. It's just down a couple of streets.
Okay.
It was on Durker, if you remember what that was.
I know I have passed that street many times, so.
Yeah.
Oh, is that, okay.
Yeah, like, it's near the Kenny Crown Point
Shepherd
Kroger.
Down there, sort of? Or no? No, no.
If you're on Bethel, the Crown Point Kroger, you make a left at the end of it, and you go down, and that's where it is. So, yeah, it's like right there near that kind of that Crown Point Kroger.
Wow, another one. Crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, but that's one of the 9. I have gone there already, but it's just like, oh, this would have been so awesome to have one to walk to. Now I have Nostalgia Brewing downtown Gahanna here to walk to.
Right. Well, that's pretty exciting. A lot of local breweries going on. Way more than there are local bicycle couriers, but I think that's probably the way we are heading on. Just the way it is, I guess, Kevin.
Yep, and
and a beautiful way to end our show, I must say.
Yeah, that's like you just really put a bow on top of this motherfucker.
Double tap this show. We're ready to move on.
Go support your local bike courier and your local beer shop.
Here, here.
Good night.